This is Fresh Air. Norma Field grew up next to an American Army base in Japan. She was a war baby. Her father was an American soldier stationed in that country during the occupation after World War II. Her mother was Japanese. Field's parents met because her grandfather used to bring home American GIs to teach his children how to speak English. Like many Japanese after the war, he was crazy about American culture. Her parents divorced when she was 7. Norma Field came to the States to go to college and is now settled in Chicago. She teaches Japanese literature at the University of Chicago. Several years ago, she returned to her childhood home in Tokyo for a long visit. Her time in Japan coincided with the prolonged illness and eventual death of Japan's Emperor Hirohito in 1989. In the Realm of a Dying Emperor is Field's book about the Japan she observed during that year-long visit. It's part autobiography, part history, and part examination of modern Japanese culture. I spoke with Norma Field about living in occupied Japan and moving between the army base and the rest of the country.
I made the journey every day, and what I remember very distinctly is chocolate-colored army buses between my home and the base. But I think that base culture was very central to most of the Americans there as part of the occupation. And going around in the Japan around them was a combination of the conqueror's experience and the touristic one. So you could move around, but it wasn't a neutral moving around.
Your mother was Japanese, your father American, and
right.
You called yourself a half-breed daughter in a defeated land. Is that how you felt?
Very much. In the American school, I was, and on the buses, I still remember very vividly as a kindergartner, fourth grade girls interrogating me and asking me if I had any brothers or sisters, and I said no, and finally they looked at each other and said, she must be Japanese. And then off base in my grandparents' completely Japanese neighborhood, a lot of kids would call me, would kind of jeer at me as an American, a foreigner. And I remember some experiences of having pebbles and rocks thrown at me. So, I felt very much an outsider in both worlds.
Did you see yourself then as this real half-breed, half-American, half-Japanese person? Or did you feel yourself identifying with more one culture over the other?
I remember that since I lived in a completely Japanese household in spite of my father's presence, I would go to school, and when we're asked to make teacups or draw things around the house, I always came up with Japanese furnishings, and my grandmother would be mortified and said, oh, no, we have to teach Norma what Western domestic things look like. So even in the Japanese circumstances, I think I was always being trained to efface or at least to learn to pass as an American. And I really, really, as a child, wanted to be Caucasian. I would look at myself on sunny days on the glass doors and look at the red highlights in my hair that would only show up then and think, gee, maybe I'm turning whiter.
You write in your book, and this is about biracial children, and you write, they were nothing if not the embodiment of sex itself. Now, I modify it, the biracial offspring of war are at once more offensive and intriguing because they bear the imprint of sex as domination. That's a very powerful phrase. powerful idea.
Yeah. Now, in my case, because my parents were married and because I was very strictly raised and educated, I didn't live the stark marginality of all the many, many, many illegitimate children produced by World War II and the Korean War. And I do remember at the time of the Vietnam War, the baby lift, when a number of particularly biracial children were being airlifted out of Vietnam to be sent for adoption in the United States. Contrary to my usual political affiliations, I felt that progressive types in America who said we're robbing the Vietnamese of their future, I felt, you know nothing about what it means to look different in a traditional culture. By which I mean that I think Americans of whatever race can be insensitive to racism within non-Western societies.
How would you say the American occupation affected the Japanese culture, even the Japanese spirit, to be an occupied country after World War II?
Yeah, I think that, and this is direct bearing on the present moment, I think that by and large, it was a very warmly embraced occupation. The cliche almost is candy bars and chewing gum, that's what American GIs were tossing out to hungry children. Of course, there are particularly older men who really think of it in sexual terms, of Japan having been womanized and raped. But I would say that's a distinct minority opinion. Japanese occupation brought with it American occupation of Japan brought with it American popular culture. And Japanese went for it like fish to water, like people everywhere around the world, certainly in those days. And to this day, American popular culture, unlike American cars, is enormously influential and loved in Japan.
When you came to the United States, how would you compare then living here as a Japanese American as opposed to living in Japan?
I felt enormously liberated, and I say that as someone who tends to be quite critical and alienated from many things American or American government policy and the like. In those days, still in Japan, I would go home on vacations from college and just go down to the corner store to get something. And if I go out in my dungarees, my grandmother would be upset. This is completely different now. I'm talking 20 years ago. But the fact that I could be anonymous in America was such a gift after feeling so conspicuous, whatever I did and whatever age I was in Japan. It's still infinitely easier.
Norma Field is my guest. She teaches Japanese literature as an associate professor at the University of Chicago. And she's written a book called In the Realm of a Dying Emperor. And it's in part an autobiography, also a look at Japanese relationship to its past and an examination of the Japanese culture today. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Norma Field, and her book is called In the Realm of a Dying Emperor. You returned to Japan a few years ago, and as it turned out, your visit coincided with the rather protracted death of Japan's Emperor Hirohito. How did Japan observe his dying?
That was an extraordinary experience. As most of your listeners will no doubt know, Japan is what people might call a postmodern. Certainly Tokyo is a postmodern society now. People don't normally think much about the emperor, the imperial institution at all. And yet, with his collapse in mid-September, everything began to change in the society. There, of course, had been plans for this, or thinking about it, because he was elderly and had surgery the year before. And to give you an indication of the conjuncture that this was, there was enormous debate about whether it was appropriate for a knife to penetrate the jeweled sovereign body, jeweled being literally an epithet to honor the emperor's body. So after he collapsed, and because it was uncertain when the death would take place, everyone began to think about what they should be doing to show their concern. Department stores wondered what, and the day of the death had long been murmured about as X Day. Department stores wondered how they should instruct their customers on X Day. Still baseball season, when, what should happen? What should the crowds be told? Should the game count if three innings had been played? Should it be dispersed? Movie theaters also worrying about what they should do, and they began to consult with each other. The media, radio and television, what kind of programming was appropriate? They stocked up on nature programs. It was thought that would be dignified enough. And a lot of Bach. We heard a lot of Bach those days.
You make an interesting point there. This is talking about how the press was reporting on his condition. Mm. On the one hand, they never told the public that he had abdominal cancer.
Right.
But on the other hand, there were detailed accounts of all his bodily functions.
Extraordinary. Both the vomiting of blood and rectal bleeding. And the term for rectal bleeding was unfamiliar. I think it sent a lot of people to their dictionaries. But nevertheless, we had accounts of his temperature and the amount of rectal bleeding and the amount of blood transfusion. So, of course, people started circulating vampire stories and the like. The practice of not talking about cancer, it still is relatively, it's quite non-standard in Japan not to tell cancer patients of their condition. And in fact, I have discussed that really as a kind of a sign of the emperor system itself, that patients not be told.
Why was Emperor Hirohito so revered in Japan? And he, of course, was emperor when Japan was at war during World War II. Japan was defeated at the end of World War II.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he is revered. And in the hours and hours of documentaries that were played after his death, everyone used the stock phrase of the light and dark of his reign. The dark, of course, being the pre-war and wartime years. I think that he is revered precisely because he presided over Japanese economic recovery in the post-war years, and that is very much the longer part of his reign. If he hadn't lasted so long into high-growth economics, for instance, I don't think he could have been revered in the way he came to be. Because he himself never had to take responsibility for the war, which is an issue, of course, that became very central during the months of his dying. He, in a sense, allowed the Japanese to have a guilt-free post-war history.
What do the history books then say about World War II and Emperor Hirohito? How do they write about?
Well, in order to understand that, you have to understand how centralized Japanese education is. For example, there are books that tell you what day's field day can be held in Japanese elementary schools and when the opening ceremony should be all around the country. Remember, this is a country that exists in one time zone. The education ministry also gets to screen all textbooks. This, of course, has become became a major issue in the 1980s because of complaints coming from Japan's neighbors, namely China and Korea, about the ways in which, for example, what we refer to as the rape of Nanking is treated in Japan. It's reminiscent of the American debate over incursion and invasion in Vietnam, in fact. And the ignorance or the cover-up of Japanese atrocities, both in colonized Korea and in China. When there have been progressive historians attempting to write about this in textbooks, they have run into Ministry of Education censorship, and there are long, long trials still ongoing about what can be printed in Japanese textbooks about Japanese wartime history.
Now, do you have children of your own?
Yes.
Have you taken them back to Japan?
Quite a bit, yes.
And for them, what does the country look like through their eyes? Can you tell?
My daughter, who is now 16 and was very involved in the writing of this book, has enormous investments in Japan, and particularly in her Japanese family. She's very attached. In fact, both the children really are attached to it. At the same time, I think what it has done, particularly for my daughter, because she's older, is to understand what it means to be attached to a society and yet be critical of it. It's given her both a place to look at America critically, and then living in America gives her a place to look at Japan critically.
And for you, then, is it any easier to move between those two countries and cultures?
Yes, I think so. I think so. I mean, I remain profoundly attached to Japan in a way that puzzles me sometimes, but there I am.
Puzzles you because?
Because the society is just so ruthless and so you begin to feel that you can't breathe when you're there. Because I don't work there, because I'm not part of the society in that way, I don't have to experience that. I don't have to suffocate in the way so many of my friends do.
Norma Field, I thank you so much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you very much.
Norma Field is the author of In the Realm of a Dying Emperor, A Portrait of Japan at Century's End. This is Fresh Air.